Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2022, and this is episode 300, which is a conversation about the zombie film genre, complete with spoilers for some of these films. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is an associate professor of theology at Houston Baptist University. He is also the author of The Poetics of Evil. Phil has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Our Own Worst Enemy, Zombie Movies and the Horror of Human Sin. And our subscribers can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. Now, if you don't already subscribe, what better way to do it than to do it so you can read this article and, of course, go on to our website, equip.org. Every subscription for $33.50 gets you the print edition straight to your door, but you also get the online access to the exclusive articles and reviews that we have. Phil, it's good to have you on.
Always a pleasure.
This episode marks a very big milestone for the Postmodern Realities podcast because we've finally reached episode 300. This has been 6 years in the making since the podcast started back in 2016, and Phil Tallon was here at the very beginning for episode one when he and I had a conversation about the films of director Quentin Tarantino. And Phil's been here for every milestone episode since. So I'm very glad to welcome him back on the podcast again because it's been a while. Now, if you've just discovered this podcast and are a new listener, we have covered such a wide variety of topics that I encourage you to go and look at the back catalog of episodes, because if you're wondering about a certain topic or television show or TV series, we have probably covered it. And you will be very encouraged by every single one of these 300 conversations that I've had with our Christian Research Journal authors over the years. All of their insights have been so thoughtful, and all of these subjects are here to help equip Christians to think Christianly. So, Phil, it's great to have you here with us today to talk about zombie films. I guess my biggest question, because I'm not really a horror film person, and I know that there have been some very significant horror films making some kind of big philosophical points lately that have become really well watched, like the one called Get Out, for example. But I think most Christians don't think about watching a horror movie. They put that in a category as something that would be very bad, let alone a zombie film, because I mean, even for people who maybe aren't religious, zombie films might be off the table. They just seem like they have these just really amped up horror tropes, you know, people eating brains and just, you know, really scary walking corpses everywhere and just fear, just terror, you know, for however long the zombie film is, or even I would say TV series like The Walking Dead, just that kind of coming to the subject with this sense of dread. So, what reason would anybody even want to watch a horror movie, let alone a zombie movie?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one I get a lot. I'm currently writing a book. I've got a co-author writing about horror movies and theology. And so a lot of people are suspicious. Oh my goodness, you're doing what? And so it's understandable, I think. And I would definitely say, you know, nobody has to watch horror movies. That's not to your taste, or you're worried about it for some other reason. By all means, don't. But I think there are some really interesting features to horror movies, especially for people who are interested in critically engaging with culture and understanding what's going on. You know, one of the big ones is that horror is a confrontational and sort of disruptive genre in a certain way. A lot of our entertainment, popular Hollywood entertainment, really is intended to soothe, to make us feel good, to reassure. And horror is not about that. you know, sometimes a horror movie will have a positive resolution, but a lot of times it's, you know, very happy to just kind of disturb us and present us with a vision of something that's negative. And there are a lot of features of human life that are negative. There are a lot of aspects of, you know, ourselves as humans that are negative. And so I appreciate the kind of philosophical honesty, as it were, of horror movies at certain points, that they're willing to confront the negative side of life. And that can span a whole bunch of different, you know, things, talking about the possibility of the supernatural and the, you know, existence of, you know, negative spiritual realities. So movies like The Exorcist apparently have driven people to back to faith because they were afraid of demon possession and said, I don't want any part of that. I'm going back to church. And likewise, you know, I think that something like a zombie movie can sort of paint a picture of the sort of what humans are capable of when things go wrong, in a way that's in some ways kind of more honest and true to, you know, who we are as fallen people. So Christians would say, you know, yeah, we're sinful, we're fallen, we're capable of great evil. And zombie movies sometimes address that. Not always. Not all horror movies are philosophically interesting. Some are exploitative garbage, but, you know, there are some good ones too. Much like there are good superhero movies or good romance, you know, films and bad ones. And I think that people who are interested should check out some of these articulate horror movies. It's a big genre now. There's all kinds of critically interesting horror is being made, and it's kind of risen to the top of the cultural conversation.
I do want to mention a horror movie that came to mind when I knew you were going to cover this subject for us. And that is, more than 15 years ago, there was a film that came out called The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And that was actually directed and co-written by a Biola, which is a Christian University graduate, Scott Derrickson. So he earned degrees at Biola and then went on to the University of Southern California, USC Film School. And then he directed and wrote this very well-received film just in the horror genre. So I think that there are Christians that are thoughtful, that are out there thinking about horror movies and some kind of theological implications of those. And so given that, you know, are there any common theological themes that you find in horror movies? And, you know, as Christians, if it's something that they could watch, a horror movie, what kind of truths that might be in such a movie that they could find, and really, you know, an unlikely vehicle for thinking about theological, you know, themes and issues?
Scott Derrickson's career is fascinating. He just had a new movie come out. I haven't seen it. I don't know. He directed the first Doctor Strange film, and so he's a Biola grad who's working in mainstream Hollywood. Exorcism of Emily Rose is a commendable film. I think it's about a trial, an exorcism trial, and the question is kind of, is exorcism ever kind of the appropriate way to help someone, right? And so that raises the question, you know, does the spiritual exist? And so you have this kind of faith question that's at the center of the movie. One of the things the movie does is the movie thinks that the spiritual does exist and that there are such things as demons, evil spirits. And so at 3 a.m., which is kind of the new midnight, right, when everybody's asleep, you'll see the alarm clocks on people's bed will go haywire and start to act strangely. It's the sign that spirits are present. And the last scene in the movie is the sort of skeptical atheist character goes home, lays down in bed after having been presented all this evidence about evil spirits being real, and turns her alarm clock around to the wall so she won't have to look at it. And I thought, oh, that's a clever ending. Her faith in materialism has been shaken by the movie. And I thought, that's an even cleverer move for the filmmaker, because then all the people in the audience, this movie came out 10 years ago when more people were using alarm clocks, I think, all the people in the audience will go home after watching this movie, the scary movie, they'll lay down in bed and they'll look at their alarm clock, and they will be presented with the question, do I think there's a possibility of something else in the spiritual realm that could affect us? And so it's kind of almost an apologetic confrontation we can get through horror.
Yeah, I was going to say about the movie is that I didn't realize that it was based on an actual court case in the 70s where a German priest was tried for the death of a girl because he was attempting an exorcism on her. And it was kind of that age old, well, is there a spiritual element here or was she mentally ill? So why would there be an exorcism? So that was kind of like the basis for this film that Derrickson made.
Yeah, and that's kind of connected with what I think is maybe a theological takeaway from thoughtful, well-made horror movies, is that I think that they, if there's kind of one through line, is they can help us to take evil seriously, right? Just say to kind of feel the weight of evil, of sin, of corruption, of sort of damage to the moral order, the natural order, and you don't just kind of know this conceptually, but you feel it viscerally when you encounter a horror movie. So Noel Carroll, who's a philosopher of horror, kind of describes the horror genre as being the underside of the Enlightenment. So as Enlightenment kind of rationalism becomes pervasive, there's this undercurrent of horror fiction that begins to, you know, rise up. Frankenstein and Dracula and other works that kind of present us with, as it were, the kind of the ugly realities of evil that we had hoped would be eradicated in this age of reason and scientific truth and so forth. And so I think that there's a sense in which, you know, horror kind of in its various manifestations, whether you're watching a movie about, you know, spiritual evils or, you know, monstrous things that happen, or, you know, even just a terrible, you know, terribly evil person doing awful things, like a serial killer or something like that, is they present us with this kind of ineradicable truth about our world, which is that the world is shot through with evil. And, you know, I think we tend to want to ignore that. So so this is Postmodern Realities podcast, right? So in a postmodern age, maybe we're not suffering from some of the same Enlightenment ideas of universal reason. Maybe we're confronted with kind of relativism. Well, there's no such thing as kind of an objective moral order. Different communities have different ideas of right and wrong. Maybe even different people have these different ideas of right and wrong. It's right for you, it's not right for you, etc. And whereas horror aesthetically, in a certain sense, presents us with a shared reference point for something which the entire audience, if the movie is working, agrees, that's bad, that's evil. And so it can kind of puncture our perhaps ambient relativism as well. So these are some of the effects that I think horror can present to us that can be helpful for using art to think about what it means to be human in God's world.
Well, you were just mentioning Dracula and Frankenstein. And as a matter of fact, Frankenstein was written in 1818. That was a long time ago. And Dracula was also written in the 1800s. So I think there's always been that fascination with some kind of horror element. Like, what does that mean for us in terms of fear, especially? And I think Dracula, and, you know, this is about zombies, of course, but with vampires, it's still such a popular topic to create a film, or, you know, especially books and television series. I mean, there's still a longevity there with that whole theme. And so likewise, I think that zombie themed, you know, entertainment in general is popular. I mean, not just, you know, books, but also, of course, films and television series. I mean, The Walking Dead is, you know, going to have prequels, and they've gotten all kinds of spinoffs, and they're thinking about more. And it's just been a water cooler kind of series. And also there's video games. So why do you think there's such a fascination with these kind of horror tropes of things like, you know, vampires and zombies and just the really scary and macabre?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, zombies have been very popular of late. And maybe we're a little bit past the kind of the heyday of zombie-themed entertainment. So this, I still think it's relevant. There's just a new Resident Evil, you know, TV show came out on Netflix, and I don't think there's ever going to be an end to zombie video games. Certainly The Walking Dead, I mean, that was the most popular show, I think, on cable television, you know, massively influential and interesting, and, you know, plenty of video games. I mean, I think there's a certain sense in which, if you think about kind of culture as a, you know, sort of big machine, you know, zombies were kind of the the latest monster to sort of go into the go into the mill to, you know, be kind of ground up and produced. And whereas vampires have been around for a while and have been sort of all different kind of variations and so forth, and, you know, other kind of monsters, werewolves and so forth, have been through the thing. But the zombie film is, you know, is really only, you know, begins in the 60s. And I think Night of the Living Dead is the big thing. So it's a little bit more recent. I think it still had some kind of shock in it. And so it's only kind of, it's gone through its life cycle. And I think the kind of the end of that life cycle you see is where the zombie becomes, you know, the hero, right? That's kind of the arc almost that you see of the monster. Is the velociraptors in Jurassic Park start off as the worst villains, and then by Jurassic World you come around and actually now they're heroic, and the vampire likewise is, you know, sort of this evil monster, and then now you have, you know, vampires as love interests. And only recently have we seen movies like Warm Bodies and or iZombie where the kind of the zombie becomes the main character, right? But for a long time they were the sort of ultimate specter of the unclean, awful, villainous presence. And so I think their newness, you know, contributes to that. But also, I think there's a sense in which the zombie presents us with a very modern kind of monster. So there are no religious trappings associated with the zombie. So it's either a virus infection typically or some kind of alien meteor or something like that that's causing the dead to rise. So it doesn't have those religious trappings like the vampire, for instance. And it also, so it doesn't have those kind of religious associations, but then it also it comes in as a sort of a threat to civilization itself, which is to say that if you're surrounded by people, right, what's the greatest threat that surrounds you? Well, it's really other people, right? Crime or, you know, just congestion, other kinds of things like that. So the zombie sort of presents us with a kind of monster that doesn't have to come from the woods, doesn't have to come from the water, doesn't have to come from anywhere except next door. And in that regard, I think it reflects to some degree a kind of maybe an anxiety about kind of modern civilization and perhaps even a fantasy about freeing ourselves from all the trappings and difficulty of modern life. You know, we just, everything is kind of handled for us. And so, you know, what if all of a sudden all this was taken away and we had to go back to a state of survival? And so I think there's a sense in which the kind of the fear and the fantasy of sort of escaping from civilization or the sort of the trappings of civilization play into the attraction of the zombie story.
So one of the things that happens in zombie films, and, you know, it's kind of like one of those, some of the tropes that are always in zombie films, there's just some ethical questions that come up. So usually the protagonists realize they need to kill, like, you know, masses of the undead in order to survive. So is it kind of like one of those, you know, we shoot them first or chop off their heads first and then think about what we're actually doing? And in one of the zombie films that I've watched, which is Shaun of the Dead, which I know you cover in your article, it's like that situation is presented to the protagonist because he has to actually kill, you know, his parents, his mother and stepdad, plus his former roommate that were once, you know, people he loved and interacted with and now are, you know, friends from college, and now they've turned into the undead. So how what kind of, you know, ethical questions do people grapple with when they watch these zombie films?
In some sense, the focus of the zombie as a monster is on the human body, right? It's just to say kind of what are the various awful things that can happen to a human body or just the body itself becoming the threat. And what do you do when the body of the person you loved is now a hostile force, you know, against you? So that's any storyteller, you know, would do well to, you know, to exploit as many of those situations to present the protagonist of situations where the body of the person that they love, now they have to destroy in some sense. And you see different zombie stories handling this with, you know, more or less sensitivity. I think in the first episode of The Walking Dead, there's a really, I thought, you know, well done scene where the main character encounters a woman who's a zombie whose half of her body is gone, and he kind of regards it not so much with fear as just with pity. It doesn't present much of a threat. It's crawling very slowly, and he takes out his gun and shoots the zombie in the head, you know, as an act of mercy, right? And so even in this monstrous form, there's still some kind of compassion and care for the embodied, the form of the person that once was. And, you know, and that, I think that's laudable. Of course, Christians have always had a high regard for what happens to our bodies even after they've died, you know, caring for them and burying them appropriately and even, you know, transporting remains and so forth, because we think that our bodies are a key component of our personhood, right? We're not just minds or spirits that have, you know, kind of been wrapped inside this flesh, but in some sense, to be a person is to be the two together, to be a body and a soul that are appropriately united. And that's the vision for the resurrection that we have. So the zombie presents a kind of a horrifying version of after death embodied life, right? Of mindlessness and so forth. And so I think that a good zombie movie will take the kind of the way that we treat the body seriously and, you know, kind of think through, you know, all the kind of features of what it means to treat the body with respect or not. So you saw that in Shaun of the Dead, you know, as, you know, the guy's mother has died. She's come back. She's clearly, you know, now filled with this kind of malignant will to destroy, maybe not even a will, just an impulse to destroy. And it's difficult for him to shoot her in the head because here's the face of the woman who raised him and who he loves. I don't know that that's an ethical question necessarily, in that it seems within the logic of a zombie movie, it's right to eliminate the zombies, but it certainly is wrapped up in kind of all of the values that we hold about how we honor people by the way that we treat their bodies.
Well, the best gift that you can give us to help us celebrate for this big milestone episode of 300 of the Postmodern Realities podcast is to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal if you are not already a subscriber. It's really easy. Just go to quip.org and to the journal, and you will see a place where you can subscribe. Now, another way that you can give us a gift is to rate our podcast. We haven't had a lot of ratings of late, and we would love any of our fans who haven't already taken the time to help us out in a big way by rating and reviewing this podcast on Apple Podcasts. The best way to do that is to write us a short written review, just one sentence about what you really enjoy about the podcast. And of course, just getting the word out, word of mouth, is also really helpful to us. Sharing this podcast episode on your social media accounts or emailing it to a friend or just texting it to a friend or just letting people know about it. And also, you know, we're headed into the fall, and this podcast is really relevant, I think, for college students. So if you know any college students going away to really need to know how to be equipped in their faith, this is a great free resource to let them know about the podcast. And of course, we are so grateful for ways that you can support us, even in a small way. If you can't afford a subscription right now, is to just give us a tip. $3, $5, $10. You can easily do that at our website, equip.org. Well, thanks for being here for episode 300 and helping us celebrate this big milestone in the history of the podcast. Well, speaking about this idea of how we treat the body, you know, what kind of statement is being made about humanity with zombies eating other people, like cannibalizing the live people and eating human flesh? And of course, that, you know, meme that everyone sees about zombies and brains. So what is it saying there?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's not exactly clear to me, you know, why exactly zombies attempt to gnaw the flesh of the living. It's different zombie stories have tried to, explain that in certain ways. And so I think it's Return of the Living Dead that, you know, that then actually introduces the brains idea. You know, maybe the zombie actually needs brains in order to consume them to kind of keep itself alive. And that's certainly what iZombie, the TV show, does, is that zombies need to consume brains in order to prevent them from kind of degenerating into this sort of like subhuman animalistic form. But I think largely the trope was introduced of cannibalization, you know, largely for shock effect, right? What could be kind of more horrific than for, you know, a living person to be treated as food by, it, you know, our fellow humans, right? It's just, you know, it's awful. It's kind of the ultimate breakdown in in civilization itself, you know, if we've taken to eating each other. And that's the kind of the punch that makes, I think, a zombie story really effective, is the fact that, you know, now humanity has turned against itself, and not just that we're enacting violence against one another, but we're treating each other in the way that, you know, you might treat an animal, right, as a source of food. It's a profound taboo, and one that's found in almost every civilization, is that, you know, one doesn't consume the flesh of your fellow human. And that's why horror works, right, is it takes some prevalent assumed norm and it breaks it, and it helps us to sort of see that rule that had been there before.
You just mentioned the context of some of these films having like a breakdown of civilization. And I think that's very true of zombie films. It's, in other words, it's the live humans, they're kind of on their own. And in Shaun of the Dead, I mean, all the normal societal structures are completely gone. They turn on the news and it's all blank, and they're just wondering, they're just seeing that they're on their own to survive. And so what do some of these films that focus on that kind of thing of you're just on your own against the world type of thing say about the nature of community, or just the importance of societal structures, or maybe the lack of importance of them? Really, it's all up to us.
Yeah, it's Shaun of the Dead's interesting. So you watch that, and it's one of my favorite movies. I think it's a really clever entry into the zombie pantheon, and you know, it presents this main character who's a dead end job, not really going very far in life, kind of drinking himself, you know, into oblivion, you know, not going anywhere. And suddenly, when the zombie apocalypse happens, this is almost the best thing that's ever happened to him, right? He suddenly has purpose. But you know, he really didn't have much to do, but now he knows exactly what his goals are in life. He has to protect the people he loves. He has to stay safe. And so whatever kind of crudeness there was about him before is suddenly kind of helpful in the midst of the zombie apocalypse. And so that's where I think you can see in maybe the appeal of the zombie story, a kind of a simplification. Now you just get to escape from all the other hassles that you have to deal with. It's, you know, your taxes and paying your electric bill and, you know, dealing with your troublesome neighbor, all that stuff goes away, and you're basically snapped into, you know, this kind of hyper-focused, incredibly simple state of being. And so in that regard, the picture that's often presented in a zombie movie is this kind of Hobbesian state of nature, right? Where life is nasty, brutish, and short. It's as bad as could be, not just zombies turning on people, but people turning on other people as they fight for scarce resources. So we see that right at the very beginning of the zombie movie. So in Night of the Living Dead, we have this character, Barbara. She's fleeing from a cemetery where the zombies are rising. She goes to this farmhouse. Other people arrive at the farmhouse, and almost immediately they're at each other's throats. They're bickering. They're losing their minds. They're just trying to keep it together. And so they're fighting as much with each other as they are with the undead that are surrounding the farmhouse. And so the picture that we get a lot of times in zombie movies is that if we take away the veneer of civilization, right, the kind of all the rules that we follow because our world is relatively comfortable, you know, we fall into almost immediately is this kind of this state of chaos and strife. Now, that could be for different reasons. So I think in 28 Days Later, the kind of the picture of humanity, the anthropology that's presented, is that people are fundamentally violent, right? That's our default. That's what we resort to. And so the zombies in 28 Days Later are these kind of rage-filled, fast zombies. The zombies that we see are just kind of amplifications of what's in there the whole time. We see the characters kind of in this state of nature then resort to becoming incredibly violent and brutal. Where other pictures of humans sort of after the zombie apocalypse, sometimes it's less dire. One of my favorite books about all this is Max Brooks's World War Z. The book is what I'm recommending more than the film. And it actually kind of, it shows this almost optimistic picture of how people rebuild and recover and restore civilization. One of the interesting features of that book, though, that they talk about is that there's a kind of a topsy-turvy last shall be first, first shall be last inversion that happens after the zombie apocalypse, because suddenly people who were lower class, who had to fix their own cars and maintain their own dishwashers if they broke, and who worked in manual labor, are suddenly on top. And all the people who know about, you know, tax law and how to work an Excel spreadsheet or how to, you know, do podcasts were suddenly not very useful to the world. The people like me who, you know, teach classes about, you know, theology and the arts, not terribly useful for a post-apocalyptic civilization. And so it's, I think there's a sense in which that's the fear that, you know, that we encounter, but then it's also a way of kind of entertaining another possibility, another way of being. And certainly that kind of post-apocalyptic thinking, I think, is becoming more and more prevalent. People are, in that just are the wonderful comfort and stability that we enjoy increasingly seems unstable. And so I think people are interested in imaginatively thinking through kind of what would I do if all this went away?
Well, I think to some regard, we had a taste of that with the pandemic that came around 2 years ago. I mean, suddenly people thought they were in some kind of movie. It just seemed surreal, almost everything shutting down, and you didn't know if you could go out, and people were dying in mass amounts.
Yeah, and you see more and more people, you know, stockpiling weapons and preparing, you know, sort of emergency food supplies. And I think some of the, you know, those self-sufficiency measures are actually helpful. You know, they're good. In Texas, we lost power for a week during this ice storm that we had, and the grid was overloaded. You know, and suddenly you're very dependent. And so after that we had solar installed. Now we have a battery, so we can't lose, you know, you can't lose power. And so I think that a lot of the kind of assumed stability that we've enjoyed, you know, that's an up for question. Okay, you know, what if I can't afford gas, or what if, you know, supply chain, you know, breaks down, I can't get this, how am I gonna make it? And if you live in the midst of a city, which is typically the site for the zombie apocalypse, you know, that's a really live question.
I live in the city, but for some reason in my neighborhood that has more than 1,000 houses, there's a few houses near the forest where we always go out of power, and you think, well, who would ever have a generator? We still haven't gotten to that point, but it, you know, if the power goes out once a month or so on, it's just like, or every time there's a storm, you think, well, the people who are fine are my neighbors who do have generators. So you kind of sometimes see these things in movies and think they're just silly, or who would ever do that? And then sometimes you find yourself, oh yeah, we do need generators, or how should we get some kind of power if there's no power for days?
Well, and that's one of the things that I think people sometimes point to about horror movies or disaster movies, is that they, for modern people, you know, they provide a kind of epistemological function, right? A sort of way of getting some knowledge or to thinking through a scenario, which is, okay, I live in the midst of extreme comfort. At least I do. A lot of people don't. And so, but what would it be like if all of this, you know, this went away? What would some reactions be? You kind of entertain those possibilities. And, you know, likewise, there are lots of experiences I haven't had and lived a fairly privileged life. You know, what would happen if the worst came about? And so I think that typically zombie movies have answered this, you know, fairly pessimistically. They're horror movies. You know, humans are going to turn on each other. Things are going to get really, you know, really, really bad. But there's a sense in which they exaggerate, I think, some of the possibilities for, you know, heroism and so forth, exaggerate some of the negativity, but then they're also, I think, you know, valuable in that they kind of force us to confront imagined scenarios that, you know, do happen around the world. Civilizations do fall apart. Things do get really bad.
So I definitely am not a zombie media of any kind aficionado at all. I've seen one zombie movie, which is Shaun of the Dead. I've, of course, seen different previews of movies and thought, I'm definitely not going to subject myself to that. It seems really dark and very, would give me a lot of angst. But, you know, are there some common themes in zombie movies that might be of interest to Christians thinking about culture so that they should dip their toe in and consider even interacting with, you know, a zombie film?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, it's one of the, I've talked about some of the ways that, you know, that zombie movies, especially if they're dealing with kind of humanity on its like autopilot mode, kind of, you know, maybe we're doing a little bit of anthropology, right? What kind of thing is it, you know, does it mean to be human and looking at some of the ways that we go wrong. So 28 days later, just, you know, maybe we're rageful, and Shaun of the Dead, the picture is that we're kind of naturally slothful almost. And so the opening scene of the movie is going across London and all these people checking their phones and just at work kind of mindlessly doing, you know, doing whatever. It's like, we're almost already zombies, you know, with our mindless routines. I think that's, those are interesting statements. You know, you see similar kind of critiques in, say, George Romero's Dawn of the Dead, where the zombies return to the shopping mall where the heroes are hiding out, because that's a place that gave them comfort before, because they were sort of consumeristic. So the zombie, our own consumerism, our desire to consume sort of mindlessly, is connected to the zombie itself, right? Which is a mindless consumer, not of goods, but of human flesh. And so one can think through the anthropology that's in a zombie movie, I think, you know, somewhat productively, and that's a valuable, you know, point of entry. I think it's also, you know, worth reflecting on, you know, what we're getting out of, especially these kind of zombie video games, entertainments, and this sort of desire to kind of mindlessly participate in killing zombies. I've certainly played a little bit of that, but I think that's also, you know, something that's worth interrogating.
So if somebody is listening to this podcast and thought, okay, you've convinced me, I'll give watching a zombie film a whirl, and they thought, well, I think I only have the stomach to watch one, which one of the ones that you've spoken about would you recommend, and why would that be as a good entry point into this genre?
I had you watch Shaun of the Dead, so we'll circle back at the end and see if that's one that you would recommend, but I won't put that one forward. I do think that the, you know, probably the best place to start, if, you know, is with Night of the Living Dead. It's a classic movie. It's pretty much fallen into the public domain as far as I can tell, so you can watch it on almost any platform. There are some horrific moments, but it's, you know, it's still sort of somewhat primitive, and so not quite as kind of shocking or gruesome as you find in later zombie movies. And then the conclusion of the movie, which I won't spoil, is really, I think, kind of notable and still kind of surprising today. And so I would recommend that as being one of the best places to start. If you think, okay, I'm only ever going to see one zombie movie in my life, this is, you know, give me the best one, I would say Night of the Living Dead.
Well, as far as what I thought about Shaun of the Dead, I mean, well, first of all, it's rated R, not just for the gore, but, you know, there's sexual innuendo and also language. So if that's an issue for people, I would just give them the heads up, but it doesn't show anything like nudity.
Content warning on all this, on all of these movies that we're discussing here.
But I would say, without giving any spoilers, it's a comedy of sorts. And I'm glad that I watched it, because it's very much a cult classic. And, you know, I'd put on social media that I was watching it, and I had people chime in that it was their favorite film or one of their favorite films. So, you know, for kind of nerds out there that like Star Wars and Marvel and that kind of thing, they really like this film. But I also felt like, besides the camp and the gore, that there were some things to think about, just like the nature of relationships. So one of the main character is kind of a slacker, I guess I'd, you know, he's graduated from college, but he's kind of at a crossroads in his life, and he's kind of a slacker. That's kind of how it's set up. But I think through the process of going through this film, even though, you know, it's a zombie film and there's camp and there's a lot of jokes and that kind of thing, there's still some things to think about, like just, you know, the nature of making your life count and having good relationships, or really trying to understand, you know, relationships that you're in, like with your parents and things like that. So I guess I would say that, you know, if you're okay with some of the language and, you know, body humor and commentary, then it's not over the top, but it is there, then I would give it a whirl.
Okay, well, good. Well, glad. Yeah, I saw the comments on your post. People seem to really like it, and they've had revivals. I also do recommend the book World War Z. I think it's a really, you know, thoughtful and interesting text to consider. And there's a really fine audio book version that's performed by, you know, a lot of, you know, famous actors and so forth, people like Mark Hamill and Alan Alda, and it's hilarious. And I think that's kind of that's really the sort of the thought experiment, you know, version of the zombie apocalypse. What are all the different things that could happen, and how would you work through this? It almost functions like interesting science fiction.
So, you know, I would say, though, that I already knew going in just from looking at that Simon Pegg was in it, and he's just a really outspoken atheist. So I kind of had that in the back of my mind is like, you know, when you're faced with zombies, what is left, especially if you don't believe in God? I was kind of thinking about that because he wrote the movie as well.
Yeah, he and Edgar Wright are, you know, teamed up to produce their first three, you know, movies, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End, kind of called the Cornetto trilogy. And then I think he's mostly acting now, but Edgar Wright's still directing.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, as always, I'm going to have a fun rapid fire question for Phil. So Phil, during a zombie apocalypse, who is the one person you want to make sure that is there fighting zombies with you?
Okay, well, so one of my good buds at Houston Baptist University, where I teach, he's a lawyer. He's, you know, skinny little guy, but he has been thinking a long time about this, and he actually taught a class at HBU called How to Survive the Zombie Apocalypse that was, you know, exploring kind of all these different, you know, scenarios and what you would do. And so I think my buddy Jody Hinsey would be the my partner if I could lock him down. He's probably a lot of people's first choice as well.
Well, thanks, Phil, for being a guest on the 300th episode of the Postmodern Realities Podcast.
Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to episode 300 of the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Journal. And today's guest was Dr. Philip Tallon. He has written an online exclusive feature article for the journal, and his article is called Our Own Worst Enemy, Zombie Movies and the Horror of Human Sin. And our subscribers can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And it's in that podcast he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that. And every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.